How do we get off this lock-in that we have already for so many years with so many fossil fuel lobbyists there is a group of countries that really make a plan and commit themselves to phasing out the fossil fuels. What will then happen that fossil fuel producers come in and say, hey, our business model is not is ending also, so we should have also another plan.
Yeah.
And then you get a transition much faster going.
Hey there, and welcome to Money for Change, the podcast where we discuss current developments and the role of money in creating a more balanced and just world. Of course, we want you to be part of this conversation. Head over to our website via the link in the show notes to share your thoughts or ask questions. Let's get started. Hi there, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Money for Change. My name is Emma DeLeo, and I'm your host for today. Today's topic is one that has made headlines over the past couple of weeks and is still an important one to discuss, the COP30, also known as the 30th edition of the Conference of the Parties on Climate Change. In the battle against climate change, the current and upcoming years are more important than ever. We are nearing the middle of what's been known as the decisive decade for climate change action. Climate change events are happening more frequently and intensely, such as the ongoing flooding in Southeast Asia right now, but human activities are also wrecking natural systems, such as the pollution because of a dam breaking that held mining waste in Zambia. With that background, our key question for today is, what will it take to turn climate promises into real progress, especially after COP30's mixed results? And joining us for this discussion is Sven Renon, impact manager at Triodos Bank and the driving force for Triodos Bank's newly updated climate and nature strategy. Welcome, Sven.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And of course, Hans Stegeman, our chief economist and director of impact and economics, also at Triodos Bank. Welcome both.
Thank you.
So our key question today is kind of related to COP30, but also we want to look ahead. We want to not dwell on the past, but before we do that, let's just give the listeners some summaries. How was COP30? Was it a step forward, a missed opportunity, or something in between?
Yeah, I can give it a go. So I would say it's a small step forward. I'll start with some goods and then some less good things. So some good things are that actually a just transition mechanism was set up there. We had the adaptation funding target tripled. A Tropical Forest Forever facility was launched. And I think also in these times where you actually see less collaboration internationally, 194 countries coming together and agreeing on something is already quite a feat. So that's the good.
Optimistic, Sven.
Yeah, that's my... Yeah. But hey, Hans, I actually thought about some bad things as well. Okay. You might like this. Although it was the rainforest COP and no pathway on stopping deforestation was agreed on.
Yeah.
And also what was really the big hope for everybody that there would be a roadmap on phasing out fossil fuels. So it was a big topic of a discussion, but in the end, it was not in the text. So that's a real disappointment. And I think that's a step back also from the COP28.
Yeah. I agree that there are some positive signs, but it started already bad, and we knew it already beforehand with the US, the biggest polluter, leaving the agreement already in the beginning of this year when Trump entered the administration. And then it's very hard to get to consensus. And what also struck me was that the position of Europe was quite different than in the years before. So the continent, we were advocating for phasing out fossil fuels. But the rest of the world was not agreeing. And you saw a different geopolitical fight happening there, which makes it harder to get to somewhere. Although I agree, there are some positive development, but let's be honest, it goes much too slowly.
And you could say that positive development maybe is much more outside of the COP, because to be honest, I don't think it's realistic to expect that there will be any agreement on fossil fuels on the COP, because you need to agree on consensus there.
I just want to, what Hans was saying before, so, and I think it relates really well to what's happening on the continent. So Europe before was very pro phasing out of fossil fuels, very, you know, gung-ho with sustainability regulation. And you see also a shift even in kind of the front runners of the geopolitical sphere there.
Yeah, but this is also about economic interests, of course. Europe is not the fossil fuel producer on average.
Yeah.
So we have a lot to gain by a transition.
Mm-hmm.
We are not a continent that suffers the most, so not the most interested in adaptation or paying for it because we have to pay. So it's also completely logical that we are most in favor of phasing out fossil fuels, which is, by the way, still a good idea. But for me, this scope was in that sense different, that you saw the economic interests of all parts of the world coming together and nobody wanted to give in.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's hard to come to a consensus. But what you can do, and that's also, I think, what will happen, is on where you agree on it bilaterally or with a group of countries, you can work together and go together. And that's more realistic than to say, okay, we do it with the whole world together, because, as I said, if the biggest polluter is not there, who are you talking to?
And so fossil fuels was definitely a big topic that did not get formally mentioned then in any of the agreements. I think, Sven, you've mentioned it as well already. Nature and biodiversity did receive more attention this year. It reminded me of some headlines that you saw ahead of the COP, what they were chopping down a forest to build a highway to get to this event, which is very ironic. But tell me a bit more about nature and biodiversity and how much attention that received and what kind of results came from there.
I think it, of course, helps that this COP was in the rainforest, and Brazil really wanted people to see how important that is and also kind of feel that. I think that's a nice thing, because climate and nature are so strongly interrelated that it really doesn't make sense to look at them separately. Nature, think about the forest, think about the soils, think about oceans. They absorb almost half of the emissions that we emit. So you really have to think as nature as your biggest ally. And I would also say most beautiful ally in fighting climate change.
And what was concretely then agreed upon at the COP on nature?
Well, not enough. Like I said before, there's still no roadmap to halt deforestation. And like I just said, like if you keep treating nature not as your ally, but just keep actively deforestating the earth, that's just not a smart thing to do. And right now we're in a doom loop there. Because also climate change affects nature. So the more climate change we have, the less well nature can absorb greenhouse gases. So you really need to like turn that around and stop this vicious circle.
Yeah, and so nature can also be seen as a way of protecting us against climate change events.
Exactly.
Okay.
In terms of adaptation, it's also an ally. Think about mangrove forests that protect coastlines from storms.
Yeah.
But also in the Netherlands, if we have healthier soils, that can really help with getting through droughts better.
So the interconnectedness between nature and climate change reminds me of one of the quotes I was reading when I was researching this topic. I'll start with truth number three. He calls it a COP of truth. So truth number three is that the climate crisis, the biodiversity crisis, the land crisis, the ocean crisis, the plastic pollution crisis, they're all the same crisis. They're the product of an economic system that favors unhinged production and that pollutes everything in its way to the detriment of humans. He also goes on to say, you know, truth number one, we're failing. Truth number two is that we don't need more reports, dialogues, committees of experts, or roundtables. And him being kind of a youth advocate at COP was really interesting. And it highlights again, why are we doing this? This is really to protect the future for your kids, for your grandkids. If we take a look back at COP, has this delivered? Have we disappointed them? Or are we on the path to being able to guarantee their future as well?
I think it's clear also looking back for the last 10 years since the Paris Agreement that things are not going fast enough. And I think to first answer or comment on the quotes, yes, it's very clear, and I think we have said this numerous times, that our current economic system and also the vested interests in that system are detrimental for a fast transition. If you look at the COP and the number of fossil fuel lobbyists, 1,600, outnumbered the biggest individual country representatives that were there. So that was the representative for Brazil. There were more fossil fuel lobbyists. So there we have a big problem.
And what would a day look like in a fossil fuel lobbyist? You know, how do they go about this? Because me, it's such a clear violation of what you're trying to achieve.
You have a few options. And I think, instead of saying it is not a problem, that's not what you're going to tell very loud. There are still a lot of people who seem to believe it. But at the COP, you have different options. You say, but we still need fossil fuels. And we can do carbon capture and storage. Yeah? So we can just suck carbon out of the air and store it somewhere. Or we can instead go to green hydrogen in the end. Or you have a number of reasons to say, okay, but we still need fossil. We still need fossil fuel installations, like petrochemical installations that can be used for other things that are always linked to fossil. So, and then you can keep, and for the rest, delay everything.
Yeah.
But to be very positive, coming back to your quotes, there was last week or the week before, there was a research paper on the degrowth movement, which seems a little bit off topic, but proposals to change the system. And they did a survey in both the UK and the US about the proposals the degrowth movement has. So on a basic income, basic services, less production and less resource use, less extreme production, less dependency on economic growth, et cetera, et cetera. And 60 to 70% of all people were in favor of those proposals.
Okay.
But if you ask to the same people, are you in favor of degrowth? Then only 30%, 28% to be precise, will say, yes, that's a good idea.
Okay.
So what can we learn from it? So people are not against system change.
Yeah.
They understand that our system is not, can no longer exist in the end. It's not sustainable in the end. And they really favor rather extreme proposals. But if you confront them with relatively, in the eyes of many people, negative name as degrowth, they would say, no, I don't like it. So the positive news is that, yes, there is a chance to change the narrative, to say we can really change this economic system, make it more sustainable, have less fossil fuel and resource consumption, and still have a better life. And I think that's the way to go for future generation. That was the second part of your question.
Yeah, yeah.
For future generation, yes, we need to change the system. And it is possible. We have the proposals. We have the possibilities. The only challenge is for the next COP also. Get away of those fossil fuel lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
Make very clear that we talk about our future and not their future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very important for the next COP next year to understand that. This was not an answer to your question. No,
I think it kind of is a plea for...
System change.
I like the difference between when you ask them about very concrete actions that they could take, that an average person can take, they're very okay with it. But then if you make a big term, a mindset shift or paradigm shift, people get hesitant. So I think it's similar to what he says in the second truth. We don't need more reports and more analysis. We need action.
We need very concrete, tangible proposals that can be implemented.
Yeah.
And we don't need to talk about big words, so not about growth or economic growth or growth dependence, let alone capitalism.
Yeah.
So we're not going to discuss the end of capitalism. No, we're going to discuss how we can improve this world.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a very clear one there is, of course, fossil fuel phase out. That's a typical, I think, degrowth agenda, right? It's, you have a clear path. I think as a society as a whole, it's very clear this is just the best outcome. We just need to do it, get clarity on it. It's good for everybody.
Yeah.
And also for the financial sector.
So we need absolute emission reductions. We need transparency on those emissions.
Yeah.
And we need to take...
And also there we have good news. We often forget it. Renewable energy has grown tremendously and more than expected before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The costs are going down.
Still,
extremely.
Yeah.
And so it is cheaper. Renewable energy most of the time is cheaper than fossil fuels.
Yeah.
So we have a big chance there. It's only to credibly phase out fossil fuels. And why is this important? This is important for the stability of our economies, that we know where we go to. It's important for the stability of the financial system, that financial actors like banks, like asset managers understand when they have to pull out of those sector when they no longer can make an extra return.
Yeah.
Therefore, we need credible action of countries.
And let's not forget energy security. I think that's also, we're now really dependent on, I would say, not very reliable petrostates for a lot of fossil imports.
Yeah, that's a European perspective.
That's
that.
Hans, this is a very Eurocentric perspective, of course. But it's true nonetheless.
And truth number, the fourth truth, that renewables are cheaper than fossil fuels. I think that's a very positive one that can help that change
over
as well. If we're looking, because we all work at a bank, how can financial institutions use their influence to shape the rules of tomorrow? Or unfortunately, how can they actually help stall the progress towards combating climate change? Sven, do you have any insights there?
Yeah, it's going to be a bit boring like this, but again, phase out fossil finance. That's just the core of it. Most emissions are just from burning fossil fuel. So that's the starting point. The starting point is not let's finance fun green solutions. The starting point is be clear about what you're not going to do anymore and have a clear phase out path for that.
Yeah, I would say both. It's about what you're going to do and also what you're not going to do anymore.
Yeah.
And I think also, and that's what you were responsible for, in our strategy as Triodos Bank, this is not a commercial, but I think it's important to mention. And also a lesson we have learned over the last few years, if you want to do as an organization and a strategy on climate and nature, you have to be very concrete.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we have done last week, Sven.
Yeah, I can tell you a little bit more about what we did indeed. How we translated what we think should happen to our own strategy is in a couple of things. Well, first of all, we say, let's not just look at climate change. Let's also look at nature.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been clear from what I said before that you should not look at these things separately. So what we did is bring together the targets that we already set on biodiversity last year together with our climate targets. The core of that is that we really have a big target on financing nature-based solutions. And that doesn't just help sequester carbon, so absorb greenhouse gas emissions from the air. It also helps with strengthening ecosystems and it helps communities. And then next to that, what we also said is that let's just focus on concrete action in the short term. So we're looking at the next 5 years there.
Yeah.
With absolute emission targets, that means that you just put a cap on your emissions. That's also not something that most financial institutions do there. We said we're going to do that in line with 1.5 degree path.
And part of that is done through choosing specific sectors or activities where you invest, but also through engagement as well and really bringing down the emissions.
Yeah. I mean, you just need to do everything that's possible.
Everything that's possible. Perfect.
That's basically what we say. We really have a duty there to do whatever we can.
Yeah.
And we think that's possible.
And financial institutions could request or require that, you know, a company has to bring down their emissions by so much percent in this many years or else they're not getting refinancing, things
like
that.
For example, there's all kinds of ways that you can do that. You can do it through your credit agreements, through your investment policies, through your other incentives that you set.
What would happen if all banks in the Netherlands would do that?
I think it makes a big difference. I think there's not a lot of banks in the Netherlands, so
let's say three.
Let's say three big banks. I think that we can really then show that you can, as a financial sector, create change without that really harming your business model.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully like that, we can show other countries as well that this is possible.
And without having to wait for government action.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because the consensus, I think you mentioned it in the beginning, is consensus really the right way to tackle this topic?
And I think if you look at the financial sector in the Netherlands, a lot of good things are happening there. You have to look broader than just banks. We're having one of the biggest pension funds in the world in the Netherlands. And there you see that the biggest pension funds in the Netherlands, ABP, just divested from fossil completely.
Yeah, and shall we go into the rabbit hole of a lot of people saying, yeah, you can divest, but then someone else, then you have, you lose your agency to change because you're not at the table anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just the financial logic, I think. That's looking at it in a very narrow way. Mm-hmm. Because what we always said as traders is it's not just about the cost of capital. So, of course, somebody else is just going to finance that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some like a private equity fund is going to jump into that opportunity. But we say this is about changing norms, and that does change things. And it does take maybe a shift in you not being the only one that does that, but that really can change things.
No, of course, I agree. But I think it's very important because still that discussion pops up.
Yeah, it does.
That people say, yeah, but in the financial logic, it doesn't make any sense. Engagement, so keeping on the dialogue with those would have a bigger impact, which is also questionable if that really has an impact. So why should you do it? And I think the answer is always from a values base.
Yeah.
So we, as Triodos Bank, we want to shift norms and we contribute in that way. And I think also linked to that, already last year, we initiated together with other NGOs, mostly NGOs, a citizens initiative on the phasing out of fossil fuel. We got all the signatures that we needed. But however, in the parliament in the Netherlands, it was not the biggest success.
Yeah.
But I still think it's also a role of the financial sector for their own interest to having legal clarity on the phasing out of fossil fuels. So I think for all those financial institutions who have committed to the Paris Agreement, and I think that's all financial institutions in the Netherlands, that it would be very logical to say, hey, we support this initiative, the phasing out fossil fuels, where also the Netherlands was in favor of on the last COP. We support it and we think it's very important for the stability and our own commitments for the coming years to get there.
Yeah. And also, I think a big part of that is making sure it's a just transition, right? Because it does affect a lot of jobs. And you want to make sure that this happens in a fair way. And I think that's something nice about this initiative that you mentioned already, Hans, the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. That's not just about just pull out a fossil, it's do that in a like equitable way.
Okay, so that sounds like there's lots happening. We started off, this is the decisive decade. So we really need to take action now if we really want to avoid the worst of climate change in the upcoming years. We heard some interesting results from COP30. One of them that really also stood out to me, so fossil fuels were not part of the formal agreement in COP30, but two countries, Colombia and the Netherlands, did mention that they will want to co-host a global conference on fossil fuel phase out in 2026. So this will be a separate conference hosted in Colombia. And this will really tackle that issue where a lot of countries and where we couldn't get consensus on in COP30. Is this going to be a game changer? Are we going to expect only the coalition of the willing to be present? Are the petro states going to be absent?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are we speculating?
Well, it depends a bit what you define as a petro state. I do think there will be oil and coal and gas producing countries.
Yeah.
They're actually part of that group during the COP that asked for a fossil fuel phase out roadmap.
Yeah.
But I think this is only good that this is a coalition of the willing because we need a breakthrough, right? You need a social tipping point on this. Something needs to start moving.
Fair point.
Yeah, and it's also good if for instance, only those demanding fossil fuels, so not the producers, but the users, the consumers are there. And they start to have an agreement on the phasing out of fossil fuels. Yeah. What will happen to the demand overall of fossil fuels? It will go down.
Exactly.
So it's also, in the end, if it's a credible coalition in the interest of the fossil fuel producers to be there to see what's happening with their demands.
Yeah.
They'll be nervous about this.
Yeah. No, but I think this is typically something you can do with a coalition of the willing, with a large group of countries, which also have a clearly, that's why I said before, it is also about economic interests.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's clearly about the interest of Europe to phase out fossil fuels and have a mature renewable energy industry. It's very clear. That's of our economic interest. That's in a strategic autonomy. Well, we have all things going on geopolitically.
Yeah.
So why not combine it?
Yeah. And the same logic applies to having a clear roadmap to divesting or to phasing out fossil fuels. It also applies to those producing countries because they're going to start losing income. They're going to start, you know, what do they do with the reserves? They will also want clarity. So in the end, clarity and transparency would...
Yeah, but it starts... So how do we get off this lock-in that we have already for so many years with so many fossil fuel lobbyists there is a group of countries that really make a plan and commit themselves to phasing out the fossil fuels. What will then happen that fossil fuel producers come in and say, hey, our business model is not is ending also, so we should have also another plan.
Yeah.
And then you get a transition much faster going. That's my hope for coming
here. Yeah, me too. And I think one nice thing that did come out of the COP is this just transition mechanism. And this can really help that.
Yeah.
Because then you can also, the countries that are still really dependent on producing fossil fuels, they can be getting help from that mechanism.
So they'd be getting financial support. Then.
Financial support, for example,
for developing other industries.
Exactly.
Things like that.
Exactly. And also developing different industries, but also having a social safety net for those affected by this transition.
I want to touch lastly, within this conference and within this phase out roadmap, on the role of the finance sector? We've mentioned it kind of throughout this conversation, but maybe specifically to the upcoming year. What kind of role does the Dutch finance sector or even the European finance sector and also civil society have in such a conference?
Well, I think first of all, this conference is really targeted at nation states. So that will be the main focus of this gathering. And I think that's also where you should start. However, of course, the financial sector can really play a big role and also show that they take this serious. Like we were discussing before, they can take the lead in showing their commitment to phasing out fossil fuels. There is already this fossil fuel non-proliferation treaty initiative.
Mm-hmm.
We were one of the first banks actually signing this, and we really call on other banks to do the same.
As well as governments, we call
as well as governments, yeah. as well as NGOs, and as well as citizens. Everybody can support this. So I think that's just a clear one that you can do. And by the way, I think it's important to mention the Dutch government that's co-organizing this with Colombia did not sign this yet. Yeah. So maybe that's the starting point.
Cool. Yeah.
Let's follow the Colombia in signing this.
And maybe we have to do another citizens initiative like we did last year.
Maybe we should do that.
I don't know. No, completely agree. But what should also happen to make this work is that financial institutions take climate risk seriously, not only in terms of reporting and transparency, mm-hmm. but also on acting.
Yeah.
And I think then it's clear that you should phase out fossil fuels for your risk profile.
Absolutely.
And take responsibility for that. So that's from short-term going to long-term finance. And I think that's also a piece that is quite often missing.
Yeah.
And what about the role of citizens, our listeners, for example? What could they do themselves? I mean, you might be hearing this and feeling a little uneasy or a bit disappointed, anxious perhaps even. What can regular people do to get this phase out going faster?
Yeah, I want to separate between individualized responsibility and individual responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And with individualized, I mean the neoliberal idea that you are responsible for everything you do and you can only change everything you do. Now we need to, and that's why it is still individual responsibility, we mm-hmm. also need to change the system because we live in a system. So that means, to make it very simple, not only eating sustainable or moving to your work by train, but also advocating for public railways or changing the food system and moving your money to a sustainable bank, for instance, that kind of stuff. So what is in your sphere of influence, also your voting, also your behavior, but also collective action that can really move change?
Yeah, recognizing that you're part of a wider system or
a society.
A society,
with other people together.
Yeah. So you'd say, Hans, we really need to go from thinking about this, like your own footprint, to what can I actually influence? What can I set in motion? Yep. Nice.
Well, thank you both. I think the conclusion I would have is that COP30 wasn't a total flop, but indeed a baby step towards a more sustainable future.
Maybe one thing there.
Yeah.
Is it really useful to talk about baby steps? Because hey, I'm the one that's making a slightly positive tone there, but if I'm being honest, if you talk about climate change, it's not about having a right step in the right direction.
Yeah.
We're driving like 180 instead of 190 on a road where you can drive 120. That's not something to be proud of, right?
Yeah.
No, but this is a matter of what do people expect from a COP. And if you would expect that it would change the world, then it is clearly a disappointment.
Yeah.
If you, and I think you're more on the constructive and optimistic side, you say, this is part of it, but we have to form different coalitions.
Uh-huh.
And then you can say, okay, this is just a step, not a baby step, a step in a process that should lead to other action. But it's a matter of expectation. And I think, to be honest, most people expect when so many people come together in a rainforest together that something happens there.
Yeah.
And then it's still a disappointment.
So I guess it was the COP of hard truths, also hard truths becoming transparent and being talked about, being put out in the open. I think there's some really exciting things happening in the coming years and just the understanding of where we do need to get to. At least there seems to be mutual consensus on where we need to get to. Maybe just the timelines are still to be agreed upon. To close it off, Sven, we like to ask our guests one question.
Okay.
And that's, if you had 10 billion euros to change the world, how would you use it?
10 billion, that sounds like a lot, of course, but I think if you want to tackle climate change, it's not so much money. To put it in perspective, last year, about 800 billion was poured into the fossil industry by finance. So just to put it in perspective, I would start small, just in the Netherlands. I think there you can do something with 10 billion. What we see there is we see a whole generation of farmers actually retiring in the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be really, really cool to help a new generation to do things differently.
Yeah.
I think that they might want to do that. So help them really transition to organic regenerative farming. And together with this, I would also focus on large-scale peatland restoration. So re-wetting a big part of the Netherlands. We used to be basically big swamp. Going back to the swamp. Well, me as a bird enthusiast, I really love swamps. Lots of nice birds there. We got really good at pumping away water.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit in doubt. Is this really what people in the Netherlands want? To live in a swamp again?
I don't think so. But we have more than half of the Netherlands is now agricultural land.
Yeah.
And looking at peatland, that's actually... There's been new research in that, and it's one of the things that emit a lot of CO2, because if that peatland is dry, the stuff that's in there just starts to rot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the cheapest things that you can do to bring down emissions in the Netherlands and really create really nice nature.
So you spent your money to create Netherlands in a rotten swamp?
Absolutely. And everybody... I think this will be amazing, Hans.
Oh, this is one of
I don't
the
know.
Best.
I thought degrowth was hard to sell, but this one is even harder.
Going back to the swamp people.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
That's it.
Nice. So farming and swamp people.
Yeah.
No, this is good. I like it. I like the crossover between climate change, nature, and
exactly.
also the social part. Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening, listener. If you liked it, please hit the subscribe button and also like our podcast. And stay tuned for the next one after the winter holidays. Have a good holidays.
That's a wrap for this episode of Money for Change. We hope you found today's conversation insightful and inspiring as we continue to explore the transitions that are shaping our world and our future. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Thanks for tuning in to Money for Change.